RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone.
You ruined it!
I'm leaving it. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
the anniversary of Hitler's suicide, Val, and...
Welcome to the Friday show. Frank, this is the way we're starting. We're in for it.
Yes, we are.
Today is the day that what happened?
Well, it was April 30th, 1945. Hitler supposedly committed suicide in his underground bunker.
Like Jeffrey.
Who?
Jeffrey.
Yes. He totally did not get onto a super high-tech German submarine and go to South America at all.
That didn't happen.
He killed himself. So, and then today is the day that we mark it, April 30th.
Oh.
10 days after his birthday, which is April 20th.
You know a lot about Hitler. Are you a white supremacist?
No. Okay. No. You just pick these things up along the way. First of all, we are a Hitler obsessed society, as you may know.
Oh.
You ever hear of Godwin's Law?
No. What's that?
Let me get the exact definition of it. I want to make sure that it's right. Here we go. Godwin's Law is an internet adage asserting that as an online discussion grows longer, the probability of comparison involving Nazis or Hitler becomes more likely.
Totally, totally true.
So it's I don't know how scientific it is, but it's, you know, some people will there's this there's a logical fallacy called reductio ad absurdum, where you will, it's pretty much like a straw man, where you can reduce a conclusion to the most absurd thing that you can to make it sound like it should be immediately discredited and put aside. Some people go on and say reductio ad Hitlerum. And so there you have the entire modus operandi of the media today.
You know, we should do that with the show today at the end.
Okay.
That's your job.
All right.
We'll probably have a little bit of a shortened banter between the two of us, because yesterday I spoke with Arizona Representative Mark Fincham and did a little interview with him that lasted an hour. It wasn't supposed to last an hour, but it did. And I want to tell everyone, I have something weird going on with my microphone, where if I even touch it, if it's not in this one position that it's in right now, it loses connection. So there's something with this connection on the bottom of it or something.
The hell did you do now?
Well, I'm trying desperately to move my chair back by pushing on my desk. And instead, I ruined it.
Well, sounds good over here.
So, a couple of things. Number one, I have to do something. You ready?
Yes.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
You.
Happy birthday, dear Lauren.
Lauren.
Happy birthday. Day to you.
What? Yes. Yes. Happy birthday, Lauren. She's right above us right now. And that's why today, this right here is pretty much the only formal broadcasting I'm doing.
Wow.
And I took Friday off, and we're going to do just, you know, have a day and hang out. And then tonight it's Pizza Frites. And then tomorrow night, we'll go out to dinner. And then Sunday morning, it'll be breakfast. So just planning a whole bunch of special meals along the next 3 days.
You're so great.
You know, it's the little things. Pizza free, pancakes. You don't need really crazy things in life.
No, you don't. You know,
and obviously, you can't. There's no option to plan a breakfast on the Mediterranean anytime soon. So it's just got to be the Long Island Sound.
Are you going to bring her breakfast on a tray, especially on Mother's Day?
Mother's Day, that'll be different, because that's her first Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Like first Mother's Day with the baby out on the outside of her.
Mm-hmm.
She got a lot of love last year too, but no, this year will be, that'll be a little bit different. We have a couple of breakfast spots that are a lot better than me taking anything in on a tray. So we'll go there.
Oh, well, fine then.
Yeah.
I don't have any time anymore to do anything, like, ever. And then the weekends get jammed up too. It's insane. Tonight, like every night after the kids get off the bus, they come home for 2 seconds and then we rush them off to either softball or baseball practice or game every night of the week, every night.
I miss it.
It's beautiful to sit on the field and to watch them play. Like, you don't realize how much you miss that after a year.
Oh, I know how much I miss it. It's 2 years now for me. I'm usually the one coaching.
I know.
They're not even my children. And it's 15 years and just abruptly, no, it's gone.
It's very sad.
Yeah. Because I never knew how I was going to walk away from it or how I was going to have to phase it out. Because it can't go on forever, but at the same time, you love it so much. How does it evolve and how does, I don't know. So maybe it's just a temporary pause one day.
It's cool. And then tonight they have, both of them are doing the singing competition at school, like the talent show singing competition. My little man is doing it too, which I think is just awesome. He really has a great voice.
Good for Will.
Yeah. I mean, he really does. And this year he did chorus and his chorus teacher, you know, motivated him to go do this little competition. So that's tonight is practice. And then, you know, William has a little girlfriend now and he wants to see her at the fun gym place. So I'm bringing him there. And then tomorrow morning, Helga has breakfast with her friends at IHOP. And then at 2 o'clock, we go to the singing competition. And then the next day, my chief operating officer and very dear friend for a long time, Kristen, is having her adopted son baptized. So we have that. And then Monday, the crazy starts all over and the same thing next weekend.
That's amazing.
It's great because it's great and it's bad. I'm dying for a day to do nothing, dying for it. But at the same time, people have been trapped in their houses for so long that it is so good to get out and see people. So there's that. And then last night, Frank, I put a little tearful message in the Dark to Light podcast Telegram room.
A tear. I didn't see this. What? A tearful one.
You know what I'm going to do? Here. This is it.
Okay. I'm really emotional right now, everyone. So bear with me. But I drove.
Oh, it's on double speed.
Being built house. And I walked inside and I was like, oh my gosh, it's home. And I just want to thank you guys so much.
I'm like a mess. Because
you saw the progress on your home being rebuilt.
My gosh. Frank,
that's amazing.
I just want to go into a little bit of detail here because I don't know. There's a lot of people that have written and said they've lost their homes to fire or lost their homes to a storm or whatever. And walking in there, it's the same house, just with a few little minor changes that we made that we would have made, you know, if we had the opportunity to, because we just lived there for however many years and we're like, we wish this was this way, you know? And we had the opportunity to change a few things. But walking in there, like, I get choked up thinking about it because I got this flood of flashback memories. Like, I'm standing in what is the kitchen thinking about the day that this happened. And, like, then I see my Christmas tree in the corner. And, like, you know, I see my kids' rooms and I imagine them, what they were like in there playing and doing whatever they were doing. It was overwhelming, and it's ending up costing so much more than it should because of the way things are right now. First of all, mm-hmm. They can't find labor. These builders can, but most people can't because everybody's making so much more money on unemployment that nobody wants to come back to work. It is a real problem.
Wow.
It's a real problem. Then supply chain issues. Everybody, I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to tell you something we saw a message float by and I have not checked the validity of this, but I'm seeing that planes are going to be grounded, that, you know, chipsets are delayed. I don't know what's happening exactly, but I could tell you that lumber to build is like 4 or 5 times the cost it was even months ago. My windows that I originally had picked for the house were on a 30-month lead time. That's over a year to get windows.
So you're bearing witness to a problem with supply chain yourself.
Huge problem.
And is that just because of the lockdowns, or is that because still the Suez Canal? What is it?
It's a retroactive COVID response. because what countries closed their borders, what countries weren't shipping, what countries, even the paint. I was told I need to pick my paint right now, literally now, because paint is ridiculously on back order and they can't get it. Paint.
Hmm.
In addition, fiberglass. I have a friend who's putting a pool in 2 years because they are short on fiberglass. It's a problem. But outside of all that, I must have got in right at the right time. Everything costs three times as much. And my only point in saying all this outside of the political ramifications was I would never be able to do this if it weren't for all of the amazing people who stepped up to help me, even when I didn't ask for it. Like, I can't explain it. I would not be able to build this house again. I don't know what I would have done. I really don't.
And so, now it's yours. I mean, that'll be the best thing about it is you have a connection to this house now from the foundation on up.
Yeah. And I, you know, so, as much as I thought I did the first go round, because we built it the first go round too, I was a lot younger and I didn't, I worked my butt off to get the first house. It's a story and a half. I'll tell one day, but this is just different. It's just different. I don't know if it's because I'm older or because of what happened. I don't know, but just standing in there, I snuck in with my family. We snuck in. Standing in there, I guess I was overcome with all the crap that I just try not to think about every day. So it was something.
Well, happy for you. I'm sure everybody else is too.
Yeah, I was happy. It was a happy cry, but there's that. So I just wanted to make sure everyone knew how much I appreciated all of you. Changed my life in so many ways I can't even explain. And there's that. So let's move on from my emotional nonsense and let's talk about the Arizona audit for a minute.
Yes, I wanted some updates on this one right here.
Yeah, so apparently the Brennan Center for International Justice, which is a leftist think tank NGO propaganda rag.
Brennan has a mangina.
He does?
Yes.
I love you.
Keep going.
You randomly come out with the funniest crap, I swear. So the center put out a letter to the DOJ asking them to intervene in this audit in Arizona. You know, the security, they're spoiling the ballots. They're infringing on people's, you know, voting right. It's voter intimidation, you know, all the things that the judge basically said, the liberal judge that was appointed in the case after the recusal said was nonsense. All those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the point now is they're trying to put pressure on the federal government to step in and intervene in the state audit.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, there's a carnival that's going on near the audit on the same grounds as where the audit's being done. And so people are freaking out about the carnival. Now, what you'll hear at the end of the show, Mark Fincham is not all that concerned about it.
Wait, why are they freaking out about a carnival being near the audit?
It's the Arizona State Fair. They don't think that it is safe to have the carnival there because there's been all these Craigslist posts for protesters and all kinds of other stuff. And they don't want, you know, one of the biggest things that they're saying is that, you know, security is lax and they, you know, whatever. Wendy's writing a piece today about the cyber ninjas that they released their protocol and procedure because the judge was requiring that they release it publicly.
What's the ETA on getting the results on this?
It will be done. The audit itself will be done by May 15th.
Okay.
And then,
man, I love seeing the fear. I love at least seeing the fear.
They're terrified. Terrified.
What kind? Okay. Now let's just be hypothetical a little bit. It's May 15th and we get the confirmation of everything that we had assumed was going on in places like Arizona. Donald Trump won it and there's chicanery going on there. What does the coverage of this look like? What are the avenues that open up for any kind of action going forward? Does the Electoral College count suddenly officially change retroactively? And what does that mean for other states where there was unacknowledged challenges?
So we've never been in this position before, ever.
Obviously.
Because there's never in history been an audit like this of our election systems ever in history. And Mark explains it in pretty good detail. But I don't know, Frank, and I don't think anyone does. You know, everyone keeps saying, oh, this is, you know, we're not trying to reverse anything. We just need to know so we can fix it. I don't know what they'll do. I mean, if Trump loses Arizona's electoral votes, what does the count go to? I mean, if Biden loses them, what does the count go to?
I don't know. It's not, it obviously doesn't, it doesn't change the outcome because there are several other states in question, but I forget even what the count is. It's at least 10.
Mm.
So it's not insignificant, but at the same time, it's more so just, it becomes a bellwether.
Right. And all they're going to do is they've already begun attacking the results. They don't even know what the results are and they're attacking them already. You know, I had that clip that I was trying to play the other day of Rachel Maddow talking about this audit on her show. And they're already going crazy saying how it's discredited because there's conspiracy theorists running it and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, the leftist media is going to say it was a sham and they're going to just completely be flippant about the whole thing. But I think that it will empower other states to do the same thing. I would love to see Pennsylvania do an audit like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like you said, that's what they did. They freak out and rightfully so, because they know that this is not good. Almost like wouldn't like release the memo when the memo was coming out about, mm-hmm. you know, Nunes memo and stuff like that or anything else. They'll go on and on for a week or two about this is egregious and that this and that. And then it comes out and they all collectively commit to acting like this is it.
Yeah.
This is all there is.
Oh,
you expect us to believe that this is significant. You're like, oh, so it's a battle of conspiracy theorists, I guess. But one side owns all the media and obviously all the judges. So that's why I just want to know what is this? Is this, I know this is a, this would be the canary in the coal mine scenario where it's one state that finally got some kind of due attention. But where does it go from there?
That's a great question. I can't answer it. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it'll go somewhere really good. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, what would you...
I obviously have no clue. Does Mark Fincham know?
Mark Fincham doesn't really... He hints around things like... He's...
I mean, not does he know what the future holds, but does he know what process is even available?
I mean, he talks about the election integrity bills they're putting forward and never happened before, Frank.
Okay, well.
By the way.
Yes.
In the Dark Delight Telegram room, there have been people talking about a little shindig, Frank. Have you seen?
What shindig?
They want to all get together. They want to have a Dark to Light extravaganza.
Where?
So I just randomly threw it out there. How many of you guys would travel to South Carolina in late summer for a Dark to Light extravaganza? 94% of the respondents said me. Give me a month's notice and I'm there.
Wow. That'd be something else.
I figured we could have it at like a resort on Myrtle Beach and just, you know, take over the pool and take over the beach and not anything like super formal or anything. But just everybody pay their own way, split it. We'll get a bunch of cabanas, bring the families.
That would be interesting.
And just have a Dark to Light weekend.
Well, I'll talk to Lauren about it because we've been trying to put together some options for the summer.
Yeah.
So who the hell knows?
Dark to Light extravaganza.
Coming to a town near you.
Seriously. Dilly's done this like 100 times.
Yeah, I think Dilly's got something else. We did our Thursday night show again last night, and he was talking about over the weekend. It's more so he's sponsoring a booth and a foursome at some whatchamacallit, some golf charity event for I think cancer research or something in Arizona. Huh. So he's actually doing something this weekend. Not totally unrelated to a show, but obviously his presence is there. So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They have it.
Mm. Sorry, I'm drinking coffee because I had a blood test this morning and I had a fast, so I couldn't have my coffee and it really threw my day off. There's, you know, he was doing a cruise before everything went crazy. So
cruise.
That'd just saying, be amazing. I mean, people want to get together. People want to hang out, and they're all fans of the show. That's pretty cool. So I'm excited about that.
We can have a morning workout together.
You could do maybe Lauren could do yoga on the beach.
Morning workout on the beach.
Yeah.
I make everybody throw up by 9:30 a.m.
Yeah, and then we have some Bloody Marys.
Yeah, I'll make you throw up from the intensity of the workout. You will not be able to move multiple appendages on your body for the rest of the day. And then we can just numb the pain with Bloody Marys.
Yeah. Okay. And music.
There you have it.
Somebody put a TikTok. I want to talk about the vaccine here now because people have dug into the Pfizer research and found some interesting stuff. Hold on. But somebody put this TikTok in the room and I'm just going to play it. I have not listened to it, but the faces this woman is making are enough for me. Here we go.
This girl.
Oh, Lord.
She's hopped up on Pfizer.
I don't. If it's not a joke, if it's actually unironic, then that's just.
She shows her arm with the Band-Aid on it and her vaccine health card.
I have seen so many of these vaccine rah-rah videos, music videos. It's a very bizarre look into the mind of just a dying society. It's really very bizarre. Did you see the announcement, the CDC, what they have recommended as far as the PCR test cycling requirements for studying just people who have become infected with COVID-19 after their vaccinations?
No.
They are now recommending that just for the studying and the analysis of those who become infected post-vaccine, that the cycles on the PCR test should be no higher, either equal to or less than 28 cycles. Whereas we know that the inventor of the test said 17, but we know that the rest of the world has been doing 30 to 45. So they are ordering that the people who have gotten the vaccine already should be tested at lower cycles just to create the disparity between the two groups.
Yeah, that's exactly what we've said the whole time about this stupid PCR test.
If the tests were even at 28 the last year and a half, most of the narrative about how this has taken the world by storm would be gone.
You know, they're doing this in India.
India, they're reporting that there's bodies stacked all over the place.
Yeah, I know. They had this whole thing. You know what they started? India had the lowest death rate for COVID out of like almost any group. And they started with the vaccine and people started dying from the vaccine. And they started calling them COVID deaths, which is exactly what the plan is if this vaccine goes bad.
Oh, they died from COVID after because of the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they call them breakthrough cases now. Yeah.
Representatives in Arizona has it.
That's what I keep hearing. They call them breakthrough cases, which is at first, when you first hear it a couple of times, it kind of tricks you into thinking something positive, because usually a breakthrough is something that, you know, you hope for in any number of places. We had a breakthrough today. That's usually a positive thing. Now it means that the virus has broken through the protection laid there by the vaccine. Now, I don't know. Maybe that is something that's standard in medical community talk that they're just trying to impart onto the general public. But this is the thing that we're talking about now. And of course, like I just said with the election, what goes on from there? And if there is anything that is confirmed as far as, stealing and any other kind of scams that were being run over there with this election and there and anywhere else, when it comes down to a battle of propagandists and a battle of media and a battle of experts, who has the upper hand? And when are the unvaccinated ever not going to be blamed? I mean, I just see an endless blame game for those who have been resistant the whole time. It was them, their fault, their fault. We had a very specific window that we needed everybody to get herd immune. And now because of them, things are 10 times worse. It's mutated 18 times over. It's never not going to be us, Tracy.
I know. And there's stuff
which is scary because there's a lot of people that just want to throw us into camps because of it.
Meanwhile, I'm starting to say, I want to stay away from the people who got the vaccine because in the Pfizer literature, which I'm looking for right now as we speak, it says in there how this virus can, I don't know, seep off of you through skin or like it's a way to mass vaccinate without vaccinating everybody. You vaccinate certain people and then the vaccine can, it's not the same thing as shedding. It's different. And it's in the literature for Pfizer for COVID-19. It's in there. I read it myself. It's on like page 74 and 75. I'm trying to find it right now in our room because it was in there. It's a long, long, long link. But they literally say like this could, and you're hearing this. We talked about this already where people are around other people who have had the vaccine and they're having the side effects of the vaccine. How are you going to know? It's worse than the virus is.
Yeah.
I'm looking for this right now because I want to read it from, I want to put it in the show notes and have everybody read it from Pfizer itself because I barely believed this. I couldn't believe what I was reading.
Let me see if I have the Thursday night show.
Okay, so this is a tweet from Alex Berenson, who has been absolutely stellar on this from the beginning. Wow, CDC Gov only wants to examine post-vaccine infections with a PCR threshold of 28 or under. That standard ignores 90%+ of COVID infections. The entire epidemic would have looked very different if it had been used.
Mm-hmm. And even then, Tracy, you and your team have done amazing work to talk about the creation of the test itself, the creator of the test, and the recommendations actually being more so accurate for however it was intended to be used around 17 cycles. So if you think I know that places like the Netherlands are using cycles as high as 45.
You see.
You're at that point, you're probably picking up RNA fragments from a cold you had in 2005.
Agreed. And I said, you know, we've been saying this, both of us. There's no standard, Frank. If there's no standard, how do they know? Like, if nobody has a standard, okay, this is what the world is going to use for COVID. You have AOC telling people, oh, add it to the death certificate if you think that, I don't like it.
Nothing to be liked.
No, there's nothing to be liked. So let's talk quickly about Giuliani while I look for this still.
Okay.
What have you heard about Giuliani, Frank?
That his apartments or his offices in New York City have been raided on account of there being an investigation from the fake law enforcement officers at the DOJ to look into his involvement in Ukraine with the time that he had spent working for then President Trump, while Joe Biden's crack smoking energy company board member sitting son
fake news is, class teaching
is going to go and teach a class on fake news in a college. Can you imagine that?
So Giuliani tells them, apparently as per him, that he left that the hard drives for Biden's laptop were on his desk. And the FBI asked him, what are these? And he said, oh, that's Hunter Biden's laptop. And they just left them there and didn't take them. So Giuliani says, well, they must think I'm credible then, because I could have told them anything was on those hard drives. They didn't even want to check. They left them there. What does that tell you?
That they just wanted to be able to have the media report that somebody showed up to his apartment.
No, and that they don't give a shit about Hunter Biden's crimes.
Oh, yeah. Well, we knew that. How many times we have to discover that the FBI and their fellow travelers sit on information that could have laid to rest many scandals and controversies that went on to dominate the American psyche for months and months at a time. I mean, they had the opportunity to nip the entire first impeachment in the bud, and they didn't do that. So, and then of course they sat on their hands again to stay out of the way of yet another major general election, like they sat on their hands for Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not. This is not. That's why I think it's so hilarious. He's going on out there to talk about fake news and all that stuff, because whereas it's ironic, because in actuality, there's nobody who knows fake news and fake law enforcement better than the Bidens. I mean, the presidency right now is only a thing because of both of those two factors. And his son is not in a jail somewhere because of those two factors.
It's gross. It's so horrible. What is there even to say? This all goes back to Lev Parnas.
Yeah.
What is there even to say? You were going to say something and my stupid headphones cut out.
No, there really isn't anything to say. I guess we can all just keep making Hitler jokes.
Well, it is the day that he killed
him. It is the day that he swallowed that cyanide capsule. Mm-hmm. And blinked out of existence and then reappeared in Argentina.
Just the other day, you said to me, and I'm so glad that nothing is going to change, we should probably consider not talking about some of the things just in case there are more people listening.
So, you know, maybe we should look at the format a little bit and clean one or two things up and, you know, whatever.
I said everyone comes because they like it like this.
Yeah.
Why would we change this? That would be stupid. You like it exactly. Or you don't, bitches. Get out of here.
That's it.
I don't know. I think that's it for today, Frank. We've got a whole hour-long interview coming up in a second, but...
Oh, yeah. This is a bonus Friday.
Yeah. But before you go, make sure you go over to Uncover DC, because John Nevin wrote an article about this Seth Rich drop.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know everything about that thing, read this article. It's I'm going to put it in the show notes. It's amazing. It's so good that I could even keep it as news.
Let's see. Uncover DC. I'm going to go.
It's the third one on the journalism drop down.
Here we have it. April 29th by John Nevin. And I'm adding that to my bookmarks. And let's see.
It's a masterpiece.
Oh, wait. And it doesn't even look that long.
No, it's long.
Oh, wait. What are you talking about?
It's pretty long.
No, it's not.
No? All right.
No, it's a couple scrolls. On Friday, April 23rd, U.S. Bureau of Investigation released documents under orders from a federal judge relating to the investigation into the murder of Democrat National Committee staffer Seth Rich. And let's see, according to the Metropolitan Police Department spokesperson who corresponded via email with the Epoch Times on Sunday, the Seth Rich case is still active and being investigated.
He goes into Bauman. He debunks some disinformation. Guccifer 2 is in here. I mean, I couldn't have written this any better myself. I was like, John, his original piece that he wrote was great, but I was like, he can do better. So I made him, well, I didn't make him do anything, but I suggested to my news editor that she have him do a little deeper dive. And sure enough, he didn't disappoint. I mean, this is as factual as it gets. I'm like proud of this piece, just like I am when Michelle and Wendy write things. It's really good.
Indeed.
Anyway, so check that out. Now, don't go anywhere, people, because Mark Fincham is up next. But you've been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Thank God it's Friday, Val, and...
Beans! On Hitler's Death Day, you can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. We will be back on Monday.
Later.
I'm joined by the ever-growing superstar superhero, Representative Mark Fincham from Arizona, to talk with us about this audit and other stuff that's going on in this great state. So let's start with this audit. Tell me, just go ahead and tell me everything.
Well, there's a whole lot to it, but thank you very much, Tracy. I appreciate the opportunity. So your listeners probably will, I'm sure that they have heard that Arizona's Senate has been engaged in the standing up of a forensic audit. And I want to call out the fact that this has never been done in the history of our country.
Yep.
Usually they do something called a recount, where they take a sample, and out of that sample, it's like, okay, were the machines or the tabulators or the people who counted them, were they accurate? And it's, you know, it's basically a statistically valid sample. Here we've got a different situation that requires the recounting and inspection of every single ballot. The reason that's important is because it's been alleged that Dominion tabulation equipment that was used in Maricopa County actually calculated votes. Now, the difference between tabulation and counting is tabulation is whole numbers, calculation is fractional numbers. And if folks understand where we're going with this, a fractional vote means that a piece of your vote should be one. And if your vote was 0.98, that means that somebody scraped 2/10 of your vote, I'm sorry, 2/100 of your vote, off of your vote and put it someplace else. And what that means is you've got an algorithm in the background that is running to try and move a number into the column of a particular candidate for a predetermined outcome.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to get to the bottom of that is to go through all 2.1 million ballots, count them by hand, and then compare that result with the result that the Dominion voting machines turned over to the county. Now, it's a Herculean effort. They're at the Veterans Coliseum at the Arizona State Fairgrounds. And if folks want to watch the audit in progress, they can at azaudit.org. They've got, I think it's 9 cameras set up so that you can see every aspect of the audit process. So that kind of sets the table on what it is they're doing for this forensic audit.
There's a lot more to it than that too, right? Though, I mean, that's a very basic view of it. Isn't there, you know, UV forensics being done where they're looking at artifacts or whatever they're looking at there. And then they're doing forensics on the machines themselves as well.
Yeah, that's why I called it an inspection. So they're not just counting the bubbles that have been filled in. They're also looking for things like overvotes. So, for example, if you voted for president, one presidential candidate, you changed your mind because we have a lot of mail-in ballots. And people will fill their ballot in and hang on to it. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, the guy said something or did something I didn't really like. So they'll just put an X through it and they'll fill in the bubble for the other person. Well, then it falls upon somebody at the vote tabulation center, once they receive your ballot, to go through and look at that and say, okay, what was the intent of the voter here? It's pretty obvious that you put a big X through that bubble and you fill in another bubble. And that's what they call electronic adjudication. So yeah. they help the voter make sure that the ballot represents their wishes. I guess that's the best way I can put it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you also have the equipment, which presents two different issues. One is the physical guts of the equipment, the motherboard and all the stuff, the chipsets and all the stuff that's on the machine itself, and then the software. And whether or not the software had an algorithm embedded in it, we have to determine yes or no. Did the firmware have some kind of an update that could have manipulated things? You know, you always have that problem with software because between malware and malicious intent, somebody always wants to – I mean, these elections are big deals. They deal with huge sums of money and power.
Yeah.
So the propensity for people – who have nefarious intent to try and break into that is, I mean, it's kind of like we still have bank robberies because there's money there. So we get to the point where we finally have gone through all of the legal machinations between the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors and the Senate. The Arizona Superior Court finally said, okay, folks, this has come to an end. The Arizona legislature has plenary authority to conduct oversight of an election. You need to comply. So once that final shoe dropped, we began the process. When I say we, I'm talking about the Senate. I'm not a part of the Senate. I want to be very clear. I'm in the House of Representatives, and this is a Senate show. But we as the legislature are supporting the Senate and what they're doing. So they found a location, notified the Board of Supervisors that they had to deliver the ballots on such and such a day, which frankly went off without a hitch. Part of it worked just fine.
Wasn't there some argument that they wanted to do it at the Board of Supervisors locations?
Yeah.
And they wouldn't allow it? So then you, in my opinion, the thing that scared me about that was opening it up for them to say, oh, chain of custody issues. They lost X, they lost Y.
Yeah. So the chain of custody thing, that was all a red herring. At the end of the day, as long as the movement – so they loaded the ballots on a truck. Somebody signed for them. Every TV helicopter in the state was followed them. And the trucks arrived at the Coliseum. The manifest was signed off on. In fact, I saw some of the video where they were video recording all the way around a pallet that had been wrapped in shrink wrap so that they could make sure that they captured all of the code numbers that were on all of the boxes that the ballots were in.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, they've been all over this like ugly on an ape. Everything that could be recorded from the inspection, looking down at what the people are doing. There's a camera for that. There's a camera that looks at the entire field. They've really put a lot of robust oversight into this. Well, along comes Perkins Coie, I'm sorry, and the 100 or so attorneys that they fly into Arizona to try and block this. Their argument in Superior Court was, well, you've not provided adequate oversight. We don't know what the policies and procedures are. And we want part of the argument was, well, news media is going to be blocked and their access. And it's like, okay, time out a second. First of all, and I think that Judge Martin did a fabulous job in his opinion. I'm sure Perkins Coie doesn't think so, but in his opinion, he repeated three different times, I am unpersuaded by your argument.
Mm-hmm.
Because they basically brought four issues.
I'm just going to say real quick, I want to make sure I get your perspective on this. And to be honest, everybody was worried when that judge was appointed after the recusal, right? And I said, let's just give him the chance to do the right thing. And it seems like he is so far. So
he looked at two things, and this is kind of the 30,000 foot view. He looked at the law, and Perkins Coie's argument, in fact, you read the complaint asking for a temporary restraining order. And it's all dribble about, well, we don't like the auditors because they've engaged in conspiracy theory and they've engaged in this and they're not reliable. They've never done this before. They could reveal the names and the information about how people voted. I mean, the whole thing was beyond fallacious.
Yep.
You had not only a county supervisor that had the opportunity to make sure that none of this happened, but he opted to fight it every step of the way, a Democrat. But then you also had the Democrat Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs here, who rolled in with a statement about how there was baseless claims of fraud and, I mean, not even open to the idea of scrutiny of an election. And by the way, the American people have never surrendered their right to scrutinize an election. So I find it rather telling for Democrats who claim that they had a massive victory. They don't want to engage in proving that they had a massive victory. You would think that they would be doing the happy dance and say, you know what? We're happy to have you look at this so that we can prove once and for all that the MAGA crowd is nuts, that they have a conspiracy theory mindset, and that their guy lost. But mm-hmm. that's not what's happening here. Instead, they are fighting this tooth and nail every step of the way. So back to the court case. Judge Martin, I think, did a very good job at examining the briefs, examining the law that was placed before him, weeding through the motions. And at the end of the day, they said, look, you know, if you're willing to post $1 million bond, we'll look seriously at a temporary restraining order and do what we can to force the Senate to turn over their policies and procedures. But I think he recognized that even under that, because of the plenary authority of the Senate and separation of powers, which, by the way, played a huge role in this, the separation of the legislature from the judiciary.
Yeah.
He rather quietly acknowledged the notion that the judiciary really doesn't have a role in this.
Well, I mean, you know, the argument was also made that the Democrats don't have any standing. I was hoping that that would pick up some more steam, because that's what they did to us every time we tried to bring a lawsuit for election integrity.
Right. I think that'll be a ballot for another day. We're happy to say, yes, we accept the victory and move on.
Yeah.
So it now is no TRO. There's no temporary restraining order. We are going, the Senate's audit team is moving full steam ahead. It's my understanding that they're going to be ramping up staff so they can try and meet the May 13th hard stop for doing the ballot inspection and count. If they are not able to meet that timeline, this is a learning process. Like I say, this has never been done in the history of the country. And right away, the left is expecting perfect. So let's be realistic in our expectations. This is not going to be perfect. There are learnings that are going on along the way. As long as this is good and the work product is quality and is documented and they can show the video, if anybody wants to scrutinize it, they can show the video of what happened. That was the other part of the lawsuit that seemed a bit comical. They wanted the Democrats wanted to have a media presence on the floor of the inspection center. Okay, so first of all, you don't allow the media into a polling place.
Yep.
And media was not allowed into the Maricopa County tabulation center. They had to watch on a camera. Yet they want to have access to the audit space where you are asking people to have laser focus on what they're doing. That is absolutely absurd. And that was one of the things that the media was just going bonkers over. I think that they finally came to the understanding that, first of all, it's not going to happen. But second of all, your demand to do something that could be a distraction, the people aren't buying it. You've got a camera. I mean, look at it this way. You've got a football game. What's the best seat in the house? In your house. It's not at the football stadium. You get to see much more, with much more clarity, how the game's being played.
Right. And I mean, people have even brought things to the attention of folks that they've seen so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, where there have been things that people have been concerned about, we roll that up to the audit team and say, hey, is this an issue? And they're able to say, no, that's not what you saw. What you saw was somebody. So, for example, there was this thing going around on Telegram for a while. Oh, we saw a guy palm a jump drive into a computer. Well, you might have, except that was a computer that they were using for setup. They hadn't even started the audit yet.
Yes.
So to make this claim, oh, they're damaging the patency of the equipment. Okay, there was plenty of opportunity for the Maricopa folks to do that for the months that they were fighting the Senate in court. So anyhow, we are now well beyond that. It appears certainly the Democrats have an opportunity to appeal. That's where in the appellate court, if they decide to take this up, the appellate court could say, we don't find that you have standing. So I would expect they're going to do everything they can to try and stop it. This is a battle. This isn't the war. In fact, we could probably just call this a skirmish at this point. At some point, we will see, I think, the left is going to pivot towards attacking the result.
Oh, of course they are. Rachel Maddow was already hot on the trail.
Yeah, but interesting that they're attacking the result before it's even been released. So that kind of makes you wonder, do you guys already know that there's fraud in there?
Because
we're not going into this with the idea that there's fraud. We're going into this to prove, was there or wasn't there?
Well, and that people can trust the system. That's the most important thing, right? I mean.
Exactly. So to that end, we had talked before setting this this interview up. There's a number of bills that are going to be going through what we call the Committee of the Whole today in the Arizona legislature that are designed to help tighten up the things that we already know have been soft spots in our election process. One of those has to do with signature requirements and notice on early voting. So when people want to vote, there's a window of time before the actual voting day that Arizona permits people to come in and vote. A lot of that. Okay, so you work Monday through Friday. You can't get off your employer. There was a day where employers would let you leave so that you could go vote. That seems to have become not a thing because you can do mail-in balloting. We have an early voting system where you can come in on a Saturday and vote. All of those things open up the possibility for tampering. But we have fraud countermeasures that we have employed in the past. We just need to revisit those and make sure that they're as robust as they can be. Then, of course, we've got things like ballot measures. In the state of Arizona, we can send things to the ballot for individuals. The 200-word description that is required may not be enough to fully explain what the people are voting for. And then, of course, we've got a campaign expenditures for out-of-state disclosures. Those people are given money from, I don't know, Silicon Valley, who are trying to tamper with a local or state election. It has to do with campaign expenditures that are made on behalf of a candidate. So those would be the in-kind contributions. And there's been a pretty robust discussion recently in Arizona around whether or not the media has engaged in an undisclosed in-kind campaign contribution for political parties and for political candidates by their supposed news coverage, parenthetically.
Yeah.
Is it really news or is it an opinion piece that is devoid of fact and is used to sway the opinion of a voter? Here's another example. Somebody wants to go out on Google and they do a search for a particular candidate. Well, just about everybody knows by this point that Google selects the information that they will give you in response to a query.
Right. Yes.
If you go to DuckDuckGo and you do the same query, you get almost a totally different view of the query that you made because they don't employ the filter that Google does.
Same thing with Bing, by the way, believe it or not.
Yep. In fact, I think Yahoo and some of the others. So any of these large search engine aggregation outfits, they're actually, and they boast about it, that they are forming public opinion by the response that they are giving to questions. So when we start looking at things like campaign expenditures from folks who are out of state, this, I believe, and I haven't read the entire proposed statute, but we've got two different things that we're talking about here. One is for candidates and the other is for ballot referrals. So we just had, for example, a massive ballot referral on the legalization of marijuana. Now, I'll retouch that in a minute having to do with H.R. 1. But that the legalization of marijuana in the state of Arizona for recreational use had a massive amount of money that was spent on it from out of state.
I wonder why.
Good question. But we also are now seeing, you know, they told us, the pushers of this told us, well, you know, this is going to reduce crime and it's going to do this and it's going to generate more tax revenue. There's a whole bunch. Of course, they give all the positives of it. What's really happened is the black market in marijuana coming up, just pouring across the Arizona border. Thank you, Joe Biden. Has exploded. So the fact that you've got legalized marijuana for recreational use. You can't really trace it. It's not like a pack of cigarettes, but you can't see a tax stamp on it. This has just basically opened up our society to something that is now benefiting the cartels. And it's I argue that it is not benefiting the people of the state of Arizona. So other than the people that want to use marijuana. So, well, but back to the whole idea of nullification of federal law. Interestingly enough, we've got what H.R. 1 that wants to take over elections in the United States.
Yes.
And institutionalize the fraud that we have seen. I mean, just the stuff that we've seen that is out in plain sight. Never mind the results of our audit that we may find. The stuff that's just out in plain sight. They want to institutionalize that level of fraud at a national scale. Well, nullification really does a lot of damage to the federal system, but it is a tool that the states have retained. And every time one of our Democrat colleagues says, well, you know, the Supremacy Clause, you're going to have to live with it. It's like, does that mean that we are going to do away with your legalized marijuana?
Right. It doesn't go both ways, does it? Or it does go both ways. It should anyway.
It's really quiet. They don't want to face that one. So while everybody's got their hair on fire about H.R. 1, I think that the Democrats, realistically, this almost seems like something, a Cass Sunstein thing. We're going to nudge the nation into the idea that we need to have national elections. But I think the American people are fully awake now. If they weren't before, they are fully awake now. And they are beginning to understand that one of the resilient factors in our elections are that we don't have a national election. We have 50 individual state elections. And then, of course, we have a handful of territorial elections that also provide consent of the governed at a local level. That is so important because it makes it much more difficult to engage in fraud when you have those. Each one of those elections is run in a slightly different way. But I'm glad to see that we have so many attorneys generals from around the country who have signed on to a letter saying, if you pass this, we're going to fight it.
Yeah. It's about time that starts happening more, which is going to lead me to my next two questions. One of the things that people were kind of up in arms about, and there's been floating around, I'm not sure, you know, how verified it is or not, is the Democrats brought forth the security of the facility, the security of the ballots, all that nonsense. And now we've got apparently mumbles that there are going to be protests outside. Has any of that happened yet?
They've got a pretty good security perimeter around the Coliseum. Everybody's up in arms because there's a carnival that's going to be happening on the state fairgrounds property. I mean, it's a big property, and the carnival is going to be at the other end. I think they're just in the visits that I've made to the site. They've got a pretty robust security package. I mean, you could always use more, but again, I don't want to reveal what they have in place. They have both uniformed, armed, and plainclothes armed security to make sure that the site is secure. So without going into a lot of detail about that, I think that they are probably going to be just fine. Are people going to protest? I'm sure they will. There are a number of folks who have said that they have heard Black Lives Matter and Antifa are headed this way and they're moving people into place. We haven't seen any evidence of it yet. And we're well into the audit itself. So could it happen? I suppose. But if it does, we'll be prepared to deal with it.
Okay, very good. And then my next question is, you know, we're seeing finally for the first time folks like yourself, elected officials, standing up and having a backbone for election integrity and just not backing down no matter what happens. What has been the biggest thing in your perspective to empower these representatives to do this unprecedented audit?
Guys like me, I suppose. I've, as long as I've been in office, I've never cared about getting reelected. I've never cared about the potential for a recall, because I've always taken the position that if I'm doing my job, I will have the support of the people. And it's been that way for 7 years. Now, there's a recall that's going on, a recall effort going on against me right now in my district, led by Democrats, surprisingly enough. And they're trying to make all kinds of fallacious claims about, you know, what I've done and not done. And at the end of the day, the Democrats want to pick a key figure that if they remove that individual from office, it demoralizes the MAGA crowd. It demoralizes Republicans and independents in general who support robust representation for their interests. I think that the left has overplayed their hand. And specifically to your question, in overplaying their hand, people have, I think, finally gotten to the point where they've said, I will not sit down and shut up. This is not acceptable. And it's, I mean, we saw that down in Vail, Arizona, this past week, a community not far from where I'm at, on the mask mandate for kids in school. I mean, they were flooded. The school board election or the school board meeting was flooded with parents, and the school board ran away. The parents challenged them and said, you're not going to do this to our kids anymore. We want you to formally end the mask mandate in our schools. They ran away. So what did the parents do? They went out in the hallway, convened a meeting of the parents, and elected a new school board.
And what's going on with that? Are they still going to be school board members? Are they going to, you know, how's that going to play out?
I don't know. But what you're seeing is these pockets of the populist uprising.
Yep.
People have finally had a gutful of the sanctimonious nature of, well, we need to follow the science. Really? So tell us, what exactly is the science? You're talking about this new scientism thing that public health officials can dictate to you how you're going to live your life. No. That's not how this works. So I think to your point or to your question, people have gotten to a level where it's just like, I'm not going to live this way. I have known freedom for far too long in my life. I am not living this way, and I don't really care what you want to say and what your dictates. I'm not going to let that stand. And they're coming together. And if their elected officials don't represent their interests, they're going to remove them.
And so, you know, Dr. Kelly Ward has been a big proponent of this audit the entire time, and I've spoken mm-hmm. about her a lot. Does the Republican Party, the local Republican Party in that district, in that county, et cetera, do they, you know, is that support helpful? Does that make a difference?
Yeah, it does, Tracy. I mean, right now, if it's not just through polling, it's through emails to the legislature. It's in the legislative district meetings. It is ubiquitous. The number one issue for Republicans, independents, and about 20 to 25%, I haven't seen the latest poll, Democrats, number one issue, election integrity.
Yep.
Hands down.
Yep.
Number two, border security. Everything else is a distant third, fourth, fifth. Those issues in Arizona are the number one issues. And everybody's talking about it. And nobody's believing what the garbage that the media is trying to peddle.
So the audit continues. What are some of the things that could happen between now and what has it done in May at some point?
Yeah, we're hoping that President Phan, she's the president of the Senate, President Karen Phan, she put a 60-day clock on this that, you know, the ballots would be counted within 45 days, and they would have about 5 days, 10 days to compile the learning, and within 60 days of the start would have a comprehensive audit report. I think that's pretty aggressive. We're all hoping that it goes that fast. But again, we are less concerned about speed, more concerned about quality. The cost, it's going to be expensive. And that's one of the things I've actually promoted a bill that I think is probably going to be funded. It's an appropriations bill to establish a forensic audit fund to be administered by the Secretary of State. Now, as you know, I'm running for Secretary of State here in Arizona. I think that it's helpful to have more than one pathway to see to it that if somebody appears with probable cause to believe that there has been a fraud committed in one of our elections, that we have the resources on hand to be able to pay for that, and that we build policy and procedure around that so that everybody knows what happens if fraud is found out. That's huge, because we don't have that right now. So we're having to dip into to the state's coffers to try and put together a package that will pay for this. And I mean, the left is even critical about that. So it's very clear that they don't want this to proceed. They don't want to see changes in how we do elections. I mean, it's bad for them when they start talking about, well, this is Jim Crow 2.0.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Do you really think that the people of Arizona are going to buy that garbage? Especially when they know when somebody who is not entitled to vote votes, that individual has just canceled out someone else's vote. That's nullification.
Yep.
And people have just, they're not going to stand for it. They support the legislature and some of the moves that we're making.
I think that you're overwhelmingly supported. And what happens when this county is done, if there's some, you know, some huge questions at the end? Does it expand after that?
Well, I've already initiated a public records request for Pima County, which is the county that I live in. It just, in talking with constituents around the county, and I'm the only elected Republican in Pima County. Everybody else is a Democrat, which a lot of people don't know that. In my own district. One of the questions they have is, how is it that we had a fantastic sheriff lose an election that everybody supported the guy and was replaced with a guy who refuses to work with all the other border sheriffs? Something ain't right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've submitted a public records request, and of course they want to charge me for it. But there are some irregularities that are just too glaring to not look at. One of those, in my own community where I live, I've had a couple of my neighbors have said, "Hey, I'm a Democrat." I said, "Well, okay, I still love you. You're a great neighbor." "Yeah, but that's not why I'm telling you this. I received 3-4 ballots in the mail, all identical. All made out to me." "Really?" "Yeah." I said, "You don't happen to have those, do you? I would love to have that evidence." "No, we threw them away because you just didn't think anything of it. And we, you know, I mailed in my ballot. You know, the rest of it I tossed." And I said, "Well, if that ever happens to you again, please save it, because that's what we call evidence."
Yeah.
And it's important to have that.
Not only that, think about you want to talk about money on a smaller scale. How much postage did they waste with all this nefariousness, huh?
Well, yeah, that's a lesser question for me. What I want to know, and we had received a tip that in Pima County there would be 35,000 fallacious or false votes. And it occurs to me, I wonder, and we'll be able to inspect this off of the run log where the ballots were printed. I wonder if Republicans only got one ballot across the board, and they flooded the zone with multiple ballots to Democrats, understanding that they had so polluted the political world with Orange Man bad that people would sacrifice their moral standing and vote more than once on an otherwise legal ballot document. Mm-hmm. I think it's a question that we have to ask. So I've asked for the run report. They want to charge me for it. Okay, fine. I'll pay the $313 that you want to have. But I think that it's an important question that we ask. Is there a defect in the way that we transmit that information to ballot printing? And by the way, this is for all four mail-in ballots. And if you go back to the Carter Baker report, they said the single biggest way to corrupt an election is through the mail.
Yeah. So it's basically outlawed everywhere else but here.
Yeah. And of course, if you eliminate that, we hear from the left all the reasons why you can't do that. And I've let my own constituents know who has said, we need to end mail-in balloting. you know, there's a great way for you to help do that. They're like, how's that? Don't use it. Go to the polls and vote.
Yeah.
Take yourself off the early voting list. You can do that. You don't have to receive a ballot mail.
And spoil it when you do.
Well, and one of the things that happens, if you start to shrink the number of legitimate voters from the early voting list and they go to the polls, you begin to reduce the potential for fraud in that population because you've taken all of the legit voters, or not all, but you've taken a number of legit voters out. So the potential to find fraud that may exist increases because you have fewer legitimate voters in the pool. Follow me?
Yes, I do. Obviously, yes.
So I've led a lot of folks, you know, when they say, well, we need to get rid of mail-in voting. Great. Get off the list. Go to the polls.
You know, right before the election, I'd gotten a briefing from the Allied guys, and it wasn't right before. It was a couple months before. And I started screaming on social media, don't early vote. Go to the polls in person that day.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, why? We can't early vote. Why not? That's ridiculous. Even President Trump is telling us we can vote by mail and early vote. And I'm like, no, I'm like, because first of all, it makes the margin they would need for algorithms so much higher. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just would have been so much better if nobody early voted by mail.
Right. And it's just tragic to see people are so willing to sacrifice their moral standing. But then again, the moral compass of this nation has been broken for a while. And I'm hopeful that because so many people are paying attention to this now, that we'll fix that compass and that we'll get back on course. I truly believe that. Because people are now holding their elected officials accountable. I mean, look at what happened down in Cobb County, Georgia.
Oh, I know.
I mean, this is not going to be for anybody on the radical left who thought that the people of the United States and the people of the various states would go quietly into the night and just sit down and shut up. They have woefully miscalculated the resolve of the American people to protect their own civil rights if the government won't.
I think that it has been a miscalculation even from some on the right, how fervent the constituents and, you know, the citizens in this country are. I've seen it myself firsthand just here in my state. It has been a breath of fresh air. And yeah, it's not going away. We're here. We're not going anywhere.
And I think you're going to see a whole new crop of candidates.
Yep.
That are fighters.
Yep.
These are not going to be I'm going to get elected so I can sit in the big chair, draw a little check and have power. Oh, no, 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 no. That's not going to happen. You've got people now that are running for city councils. I guarantee you, Don and Vail, you're going to see a new school board, at least two new people.
Yeah. People understand how important their school board is now.
Yeah.
So that's big. That's big. Well, listen, so, Mark, you've been a fighter on this from literally day one. And I want you to keep us informed of anything that we need to know or anything that is, you know, pressing or important. Great job on those bills that you guys are bringing up. People around the country are looking at Arizona and saying those guys are standing up for America. And it's trickling to the rest of the states. They're wanting to hold themselves accountable too. Really quickly before we go, do you think that this will open up the floodgates, so to speak, for a Wisconsin or a Georgia or a Pennsylvania to do the same?
You know, Tracy, that's a great question. I think that I would have put this akin to horses in the gate at a racetrack. They're waiting for the bell to hit. And it seems like every time Arizona has done something, you see some green shoots of other legislatures saying, hey, they've done it successfully. We think we can do that as well. So I'm very hopeful that we are the key that picks the lock. And if we see that domino effect of other legislative bodies saying, no, we can do this as well, I welcome that. But I want to, again, stress the idea that we did not go into this. The Senate did not go into this. Excuse me, with the understanding that they were going to find something. They went into this with the mission to prove or disprove allegations.
That's it. Great. That's exactly what we need right
objective
there.
Objective examination. That's what we they wanted to get done. Now, if people want to stay in touch with me, they can. I'm on Gab, AZ Honey Badger. They can find me on Parler at Mark Fincham. They can also find me on Telegram at Mark Fincham. But if they want to get periodic updates, every Sunday morning I put a journal out that's I try to consolidate just the important stuff and cut through all the noise and just give people signal. They can write me at Mark Fincham. That's M-A-R-K, F like Frank, I-N-C-H-E-M like Mark, at me.com. And all they got to do is put in the subject line, journal.
Awesome.
And I'll put them, we'll send them a subscription link. And of course, if they want to know more about me and my fight for free and fair elections here in Arizona, they can go to votefincham.com. That's VOTEFINCHEM.com.
When is the race for Secretary of State?
The election will be, the primary will be August of next year. So August 2022.
Okay.
And then, of course, the general will be the regular general that most states have for their state offices, like governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, those kinds of things.
Wow.
So it's we're about a year and a few months out, and we're already seeing a major fight. So we're going to need everybody's help. And the Soros team is not going to give up on this. They are focused, laser focused on taking out positions like secretaries of state, attorneys generals, and governors, because those are the leaders within the state that actually affect people's daily lives. But thank you for what you're doing, Tracy. You guys, you're getting the word out where the legacy media just, they're falling down on the job, and you're the free press that our First Amendment has ensured that we will always have access to. The traditional press, the longstanding press families, they're not the free press anymore. They've been captured.
Well, we're going to keep doing what we're doing, and especially when there is such, they're promising things like this to write about. We've been following it the whole time, and a lot of local people there too. And so it's a team effort from everyone across the country. Mark, thank you for spending so much time with me today and giving everyone this update. It's so appreciated.
It was my pleasure. Have a great day.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.